As Lawrence would say, time to begin the festivities. Herbie, let's go.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
Previously on The Lawrence Holmes Show.
So Bob Kendrick, of the president of the Negro Leagues Museum, is joining me here. Before you got to know Buck O'Neill and all of these great legends of the Negro League, who was your hero? Who was the ball player that you gravitated towards?
Henry Aaron, and he still is. He still is. No, Henry Aaron is my all-time favorite baseball player. And, you know, outside of my father, who was my first hero. But when we talk about sports, it's Henry Aaron. And so we had the chance to tour him through the museum for the first time in 1999. And Lawrence, is the only time I've ever been starstruck in my life. And we've had some remarkable people tour this museum. And with no disrespect to any of them, two American presidents and Bill Clinton and George W. Bush, former first ladies, Laura Bush, Michelle Obama, General Colin Powell, the list goes on. And with no disrespect to any of them, they not Henry Aaron in my eyes.
That was Bob Kendrick, the president of the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum in Kansas City, talking some history with Lawrence Holmes. As we complete one of the most historic weeks in American history, we're also forced, unfortunately, to say goodbye to one of the most important Americans in our country's history, Hank Aaron, who died today at the age of 86, a baseball legend who transcended sports. Aaron was the first man to surpass Babe Ruth's all-time home run record with his 715th homer on April 8, 1974, overcoming death threats, racism, and more to break baseball's most revered record. And he did it with dignity, class, elegance, a true gentleman who became American sports royalty. A pleasant good afternoon to you. Zach Zaidman in for Lawrence until 2 o'clock, broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. Ahead on the show, we'll break down championship weekend in the NFL at 12:20 with Eric Edholm of Yahoo Sports. We'll look back at the incredible life of Hank Aaron with Cubs Hall of Famer Ferguson Jenkins at 12:40. Special treat at 1 o'clock, a full hour of Ron Coomer and Tom Thayer together. It's something we started in the summer when we were waiting for sports to restart, and it was really cool. We'll talk sports, life, share some good stories, and enjoy some good laughs with Coom and Tom at 1 o'clock. As always, we want you to be a big part of the show as well. 312-644-6767. The Score listener line is powered by BetQL. Bet smarter and beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com. First, though, a few thoughts. It's been an interesting week and a half that has shown us the hypocrisy of fans and observers of Chicago sports. And here's what I mean. Last week, we heard from the highest levels of the Bears organization in a Zoom conference call that still makes you shake your head.
Have we gotten the quarterback situation completely right? No. Have we won enough games? No. Everything else is there?
The reason you were all fired up hearing that is because it's not genuine. And when your team disappoints on the field, you'd like to feel as though the people that are running your team get it. And sometimes we don't like what we hear, but if you're being leveled with, you can deal with it. So where am I going with all this? Well, yesterday, Chris Bryant went on Redline Radio and leveled with you. Bryant was as authentic as can be. Take a listen.
Listen, there's a lot of noise right now, obviously, surrounding the Cubs, surrounding you. Like, are you still having fun out there, man? Like, is it still?
That's a great question. A really good question. At times, no. At times, it really got to me sometimes, like just the stuff I was hearing. And I think I talked about this a little bit, like 2018, like the first trade rumors that started to pop up, like that really got to me. And then like, I found myself like, man, is this even fun anymore? Like, why did I start playing this game? You know, because it was fun. You know, obviously there's a lot of other stuff involved. Like you make a ton of money and there's fame and all this, but it's like, you got to get yourself back to why I started playing. And like, I just remember my first home run, running around the bases. My dad picks me up after around third. I don't even touch home plate, but like, that's the kind of joy that you got to find. And like, I found myself sitting there like, I don't have that joy right now. So it's like, I'm trying all I can to kind of get back to that place. And like, I look back on this year, like it was really rough for me personally.
Now that is real talk. One of the biggest sports stars in the history of this city being genuine. And yet Brian's still getting ripped. And I get that it's hard to feel sorry for billionaire owners and millionaire sports stars when they don't perform up to expectations. But you can't have it both ways from this standpoint. You can't demand that the sports figures on the teams we follow tell us the truth and then shred them when they do. If you demand authenticity, sometimes you're going to hear things you don't like. But that's real. Turns out, though, all you really care about is performance and production, wins, losses, and stats. And that's okay. It's a performance-based industry. But then don't get mad when people open up and tell you how they really feel, how they really think, even when you say you want them to take you inside the game. Because all you care about in the end is performance, production, wins, losses, and stats. That's become very clear in the last week and a half. And I say that because when Chris Bryant was right physically, the Cubs were right on the field. In team sports, it's never about just one guy. But man, oh man, one guy can have a significant impact. And Chris Bryant is one of those guys. 2015, Rookie of the Year, deep playoff run. 2016, MVP championship. 2017, career highs in average on-base percentage and OPS. Another deep playoff run. And then you heard Bryant in that soundbite say, 2018, shoulder injury, two DL stints. Early playoff exit. 2019, shoulder, knee issues, no playoffs. 2020, back, wrist, finger, oblique injuries. There might be more that I'm not aware of, but another early playoff exit. Now, if you're worried about Bryant's durability, that's a fair concern, similar to what I'm sure the Bears are thinking about when it comes to Khalil Mack, who's been dealing with various injuries for the last couple of seasons and hasn't been the dominant force he was in 2018, and the Bears' defense hasn't been the same since. Well, when it comes to the Cubs, that's the concern with Bryant. We know when he's healthy, he's ridiculously talented and can help the team rise above many other issues because he's great at every aspect of baseball, offense, base running, defense, at multiple positions. He's a game changer. And when he's right, boy, Bryant makes it look so easy. But he's human. And like all of us, the job isn't fun when you're going through tough times. He admitted it. Most of us can relate. These are not fun times we're living in. It's hard to go to work when you're constantly worried about things that impact your ability to work at your best. There's so many people that are probably listening right now that wish they could go to work because of the situation that we're dealing with. And that's essentially what Bryant candidly revealed yesterday. Appreciate the authenticity. Rarely do we get that kind of real talk from sports figures. It's easy to be genuine when times are good. It's a lot harder when times are tough. And that's just another thing that I believe makes Chris Bryant a special player. He's genuine. The business of sports sometimes forces us to watch our teams make decisions that are crushing. And we're seeing it really in this city from every major pro team in town, except for the White Sox at this period in time. And I get the fact that Chris Bryant hasn't looked like Chris Bryant on the field in the last 3 years. I get that one man doesn't make a team, but I also know it's extremely difficult to find someone who can perform like Chris Bryant when Chris Bryant is right. Appreciate what you have when you have it. 312-644-6767. When we come back, we'll look ahead to championship weekend in the National Football League. Zach Zaidman in for Lawrence until 2 o'clock on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
Rodgers takes, fakes the handoff, looks to throw, lofts it down the middle. Lissard's got it, and he's gone! He is gone! Touchdown! The Packers with a dagger!
Man, I'm so pumped up about NFL Championship Weekend. Wayne Larrivee, the call on WTMJ. Zach Zaidman in for Lawrence here on The Score until 2 o'clock. We'll be joined by Cubs Hall of Famer Fergie Jenkins at 12:40. But let's break down Championship Weekend in the NFL first. And joining us now on the Alpamonte Nissan Hotline is Eric Edholm, who covers the NFL for Yahoo Sports, Alpamonte Nissan in Melrose Park on North Avenue, or apnissan.com. Eric, good afternoon. What intrigues you most about what's on tap Sunday?
Oh, there's so much, right? I mean, obviously the four quarterbacks deserve a ton of praise, and you know, anybody looking at how those teams are made up can obviously see there's a common theme. If you're good at that position, you can do a lot of things and perhaps mask other weaknesses. But you know, I would guess Patrick Mahomes' health is sort of the big lingering question heading into the weekend, and then, you know, on the other side, which game ends up mattering more for the legacy of Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers or those two franchises? Just because, you know, I think whatever combination we end up with, Zach, it's going to be, you know, not only an element of history to it, but also I think a fantastic matchup. I can't think of a bad combination that we could come out with.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that's what makes Sunday so intriguing. I want to wait on the NFC for just a bit. Let's start with the AFC, and you mentioned it, the health of Patrick Mahomes and his ability to look like Patrick Mahomes out there on the field is going to be the big question mark heading into that game against Buffalo. But they played during the regular season, and the conditions were ugly in Buffalo. And Andy Reid surprised me in that game, because they ran the ball, the Chiefs, and they rarely do this with Andy Reid. They committed to the run and didn't stop running it and still beat Buffalo playing Bills style of football. Can they do that again if need be?
Yeah, it really was a strange game. Kind of had a Super Bowl-ish kickoff time, too. It was one of those COVID, you know, altered games. I think it was like a 5 o'clock central kickoff or something like that. So, but yeah, it was fascinating to see them kind of change their stripes a little bit in that game and run the ball from what 250 yards or whatever it was, and the Bills' run defense was a real issue early in the year. It also kind of cropped up again in the first playoff game against the Colts. Which team are we going to get? Which defense will be out there for Leslie Frazier's group? Is it the one that struggled early in the year, didn't play well, perform well against the Colts, or the one that improved down the stretch of the regular season and then showed up again against the Ravens? That's a big question. You know, how effective the Chiefs will be in that regard as well. You know, I mean, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, we don't really know his status. You know, it's a big wonder for them, too. So they've played in a lot of close games recently. Mahomes' health could factor in. There's just so many combinations to consider here.
Yeah, the thing that stands out to me, though, in looking at the Chiefs is when they need a play, and it doesn't matter who the quarterback is, because we saw it last week, they find a way to call the perfect play at the perfect moment to seal the deal. And there are very few teams that have the ability to do that personnel-wise, and then with a mastermind offensively as a head coach like Reid to make that happen.
And do it with a backup quarterback last week with Chad Henne. Right. I mean, you know, I think Andy Reid has always coached with confidence. He's always been pass heavy in most games, you know, it's that 60-40 ratio guy back when 50-50 was the common split or close to it. You know, so he's always been a little ahead of the curve on that. And I think winning the Super Bowl last year, you know, is clearly taken some of the pressure off Reid in terms of making that call. But you know, and for such a simple call, I mean, sprint right option, we see that almost every NFL game or thereabouts. To do so on fourth down with Chad Henne at quarterback just tells me that Andy Reid believes that this is a special group. You know, no matter, you know, who's in there and who he's got. I mean, that was a beautiful call with everybody at home and everybody, including Tony Romo, thought, okay, they're going to milk the clock here. That's what makes them so dangerous, too, is because they have that strong belief and they're willing to go for it on fourth down and throw the ball with a backup quarterback if they need to.
Talking NFL playoffs with Eric Edholm of Yahoo Sports here on 670 The Score. Let's flip it now to the NFC. And during the regular season, when Green Bay visited Tampa Bay, it was a lopsided affair, was never close. It was all Buccaneers. Why is Sunday's matchup going to be different?
Yeah, and I'm right, and you have to consider that in the equation, right? I mean, it you know, Green Bay looked pretty good early on, and then all of a sudden the pick six. I mean, seeing a pick six with Aaron Rodgers is rare enough, right? I think he's had three in his career off the top of my head, and, you know, that was stunning enough. And to see the Bucs defense kind of turn the tide in that game was a sign that maybe they were prepared for greatness this year, that it wasn't going to all be about Brady and the offense as good as they are. So that was as an impressive game as they've had. The Saints game, that's where they won big, you know, obviously was you know, this past week was pretty up there as well. But I don't know, has this team maxed out? That's the question I have. Can they go up to Green Bay and repeat that kind of performance? I think it's got to be on the defense to have that kind of success, unless the Packers' special teams weakness that we've talked about for weeks now, unless that somehow just blows up, if they have a kicking issue with Mason Crosby being hurt or the return teams give up something big like they seemingly have every week. So, you know, barring that, if they fix that area, then it really does come down, I think, to Tampa Bay's defense and Antoine Winfield and those great playmakers getting their hands on some passes this Sunday.
Have you had a chance, Eric, to kind of sit back and put into perspective the quarterback matchup in this game in particular between Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady? Because we haven't had matchups like this.
Yeah, no, right. I mean, obviously we were treated to years of you know, great quarterback playoff matchups with Peyton Manning and Tom Brady. And, you know, that's not what's happening here. Obviously these guys don't face off all that often. And, you know, last week we got Braves and Brady, the end of possibly one player's career. Brady gets to move on. And, you know, I don't even know if we fully appreciate how good Aaron Rodgers is. I know we talk about him all the time. I know there's drama and this and that. And I know everybody sort of recognizes the talent. But if he wins this game, and that's another important feather in his cap, too. I mean, this is going to be significant either way, no matter what the result is. But, you know, I feel like for Rodgers this season, it would be an unbelievable culmination of, you know, him kind of fighting through these narratives that he doesn't have enough to work with or that he's past his prime. It just, there's something about this game with Aaron Rodgers where I think he's really, really, really going to be extra dialed in and perhaps have the edge over Brady in this game.
Yeah, we're talking about legacies here. And yeah, for guys that you would think, they've done everything you could possibly do in the game, and yet there's something special about this matchup. What would it mean if Brady and the Buccaneers find a way to win on the road? What does that say about Brady's legacy?
There are always going to be people out there who poke holes in his resume. Oh, Deflategate, he had Belichick, he had Gronk and Randy Moss and all this. And for all those folks out there and the naysayers, I think you have to step back and look and see what, you know, the drama that unfolded with him leaving New England, joining a new team amid a pandemic and all the restrictions that came with it, getting familiar with his offensive line and his offensive coaches, you know, all his pass catchers except for Gronk and Antonio Brown. He hadn't thrown to those guys before. Talent as they are, I mean, this is still an adjustment. And, you know, like you saw it in the Bears game this year, wasn't always going to be pretty. There were other stops along the way when it didn't work greatly, but, you know, even the creative tension with Bruce Arians has really brought out a kind of a different Brady this season. And in recent games, he's looked pretty dialed in. It's been pretty incredible, especially with the Super Bowl being in Tampa. We could have an NFL first with essentially a home team. So just another wrinkle to a strange season, but it would be a fun one.
Yeah, can't wait. Eric, thank you so much. Appreciate the time.
All right, man. Take it easy. Thank you.
You got it. Eric Edholm, who covers the NFL for Yahoo Sports. Let's take a break. When we come back, we will look back at the incredible life of Hank Aaron with Cubs Hall of Famer Fergie Jenkins. That's next. Zach Zaidman in for Lawrence Holmes on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Things happened to me all through the 3 years that I kind of erased out of my mind, you know. I got threatening letters about kidnapping and things like this. Vicious, racist letters. I went to play in baseball parks like Chicago, Cincinnati, all these ballparks I played in. I had to slip out of the back of the ballpark with escorts and things like this. It was terrible, terrible. It was bad times for me.
I don't want them to forget Ruth, Hank Aaron said. I just want them to remember me.
Powerful stuff from Hank Aaron in Ken Burns' award-winning documentary, Baseball. Hi, everyone. Zach Zaidman in for Lawrence until 2 o'clock on Chicago Sports Radio 670. The Score. America lost a great one today as the Hall of Famer, the legend Hank Aaron, died at the age of 86. And joining us now on the Alpamonte Nissan Hotline, Alpamonte Nissan in Melrose Park on North Avenue or apnissan.com, is Cubs Hall of Famer Ferguson Jenkins. Fergie, thank you so much for joining us. When I say Hank Aaron, what are the snapshot images that run through your mind?
Well, a player that is pretty dominant in his sport. Let's see, I faced him in Milwaukee and also in Atlanta. I mean, a very dangerous hitter, a hitter you have to respect, and by far, you can't afford to make mistakes with him at the bat.
He was an incredible hitter, not just a home run hitter, even though he became the first man to break Babe Ruth's all-time home run record in 1974. Fergie, it's rare when you have a sports star that other great stars are in awe of. Am I wrong in having that kind of impression when it comes to Hank Aaron?
Not for respect of a great athlete. I think that you respect him because of the fact that what he did in the sport. I mean, almost 3,800 hits, which is a lot in baseball. And the home runs that he hit, and the teams he played for, a couple of, and got in the World Series. I just think that the name Hank Aaron, to me, as a pitcher, had all the respect in the world when I had to play against the Atlanta Braves. I knew that Eddie Matthews was on that ball club, along with so many other great players, Frank and Joe Torres. So I just think that when you in your mind, think of the Atlanta Braves, Hank Aaron's name is on the top. And you have to understand that he won't miss playing. I don't think he ever was on the DL. So he's going to be playing that particular day when you face him.
Yeah, which is incredible. We're talking with Ferguson Jenkins here on Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. When you heard coming into the segment Hank Aaron talking about everything that he had to overcome off the field in order to be the kind of player he was on it, there are few that can relate better than you and what you had to deal with in order to be successful. How challenging was all of that stuff that many other players didn't have to deal with?
Well, the Philly organization, most of their farm system teams was in the South, and I started off in Miami, and from there to Chattanooga to Little Rock. And I was a teammate of Dick Allen, and he was there in the 60s. I just think that you felt safe on the field. Sure, you hear undercurrents of people talking because, like every ball player, I think they have rabbit ears. So you're going to hear things like from the crowd, and you got to get by that. You have to close your mind off to what you hear and go out there and perform and try to do your best at your position, try to win a ball game that particular night. And it would go on and on and on. And you just have to say to yourself, I'm not going to be here that long, and I'm going to move on. And in my case, I left the Philly organization, got traded from the Phillies to the Cubs. And you just thank God that maybe that situation happened.
Did you face it also in the major leagues? Because he did. Even playing down in Atlanta and approaching the record moment, it's one thing for it to happen early on in your career in the minors, but as a big leaguer, how did it change?
Well, I think because of the fact that he was closing in on all-time record of Babe Ruth, and Babe Ruth had an aura when he played with the Yankees all those years, and now you've got a player of color going to catch his record and then surpass it. And I think that's the reason why he got so many hate letters from people that didn't want him to achieve that goal. And it's unfortunate he played in the South where he probably didn't want to. I know he was raised in Mobile, Alabama, so he knew what the South was all about. And unfortunately, he had to play the last part of his career in Atlanta.
What was he like as a competitor? Because I think from the outside, we have this view of him being sports royalty, where everything he did appeared to be done with class and dignity and elegance. As a competitor, was he the same way, or was there a ferocious side to him, especially being on the mound and having to face a guy that good at the plate?
I think Aaron was relaxed whenever he went to the plate. He'd walk the plate, helmet under his arm, and then don it on his other cap and get in the box. He never dug in the batter's box. He stood in a certain position, got his feet planted, and was ready to hit, take a couple of warm-up swings. He just was relaxed, I think, at the plate, knowing he's going to get a pitch to hit. And with me, he might get one or two pitches to hit because of my control. But I just think that what he was trying to achieve was a mark that no one thought he had an opportunity, but did it in a matter of years and did it during his career.
Just supreme confidence and supreme ability that came together throughout the course of his career. And then the fact that he had an impact on the baseball world following his career in terms of someone that everyone would look up to. And he was not shy about sharing the difficulties and the racism that he went through. It was important, I think, to pass that along so people would know. How do you view him from a full life standpoint, the kind of man he was?
Well, he was a gentleman off and on the field. I talked to him the odd time in Cooperstown. You know, he was an individual everybody wanted to talk to in Cooperstown. You know, Whitey Ford, Yogi Berra. I mean, all these players, they had an aura about them. And you'd want to come up and shake his hand and just talk about maybe his life, how he's doing, and baseball in general. And he made his home back in Atlanta where he had quite a few car dealerships. But him and his wife just relaxed there. I mean, you know, when the game is over, you hope that you can relax with your life because of the fact that your life is turbulent a lot of times, especially in any sport, basketball, hockey, football, baseball. And in Hank's situation, people were following him before he broke this record and followed him after the record. So I imagine his life was pretty hectic.
We're looking back at the life of Hank Aaron with Cubs Hall of Famer Ferguson Jenkins here on 670 The Score. Do you remember the first time you had a real conversation with him?
Probably I was going to get a minor league job, and Hank phoned me. I was living at the time in Canada, and he wanted me to be a pitching coach at one of their minor league systems in A-ball. And I didn't take that job. I took the other job, which was with the Texas Rangers. But I look back, maybe it should have been an omen for me to take that job with an A-ball team. But I took the AAA job with Toby Hera in the Texas organization. But we had a long conversation about baseball, what he thought I could bring to an organization as a pitcher and helping young pitchers possibly get higher up in the organization and possibly get to the big leagues.
Was he a mentor, even during his playing days, to guys like you?
Oh, I think he had to be, because the fact that, you know, him and Dusty Baker were teammates. Dusty was just a rookie. Felix Mignon, probably Philippe Palou, Rico Cardi. There were a lot of players of color that he had a chance to rub shoulders with and to pass on knowledge to. And as a player from Canada, having it to face a lot of different troubles in the South, he passed on things to me when I was going to be in that organization, and unfortunately, I just didn't do it. I went to the Ranger organization.
Our final few moments talking with Ferguson Jenkins about the great life of Hank Aaron, who died today at the age of 86. When you look back at the impact that he had for the entire game, for players of color, for all players that play Major League Baseball, and then you look at the numbers that he put up at the time that he retired, and I know he handled Barry Bonds passing him with class and dignity. When that happened, knowing what you know now about what happened during the game to enable Bonds to do that, how do you process the records that Hank Aaron set and where he sits now because of what Barry Bonds did?
Well, I think the most important thing is home runs by far a part of the game. And, you know, Babe Ruth was an all-time home run hitter along with Mays and Killebrew and Hank Aaron that I had a chance to face. And when Bonds broke Aaron's record, it was a thing of class. I don't think that he went to the parks where Bonds was playing, but sent messages to them hoping that he'd get a chance to surpass his record, which he ended up doing. But, you know, I just think that what he did in that era during a lot of it's during the year of the pitcher from 60s to 70s was the year of the pitcher. He was able to hit as many home runs as he did, never hit more than 50, always hit in the 40 range, and was consistent. I just think that what he did was remarkable.
Yeah, a special, special career, a special all-time great, even among the all-time greats in Major League Baseball. Fergie Jenkins, thank you so much for helping us get to know Hank Aaron a little bit better for those of us who weren't around during his phenomenal playing days. Appreciate the time.
Oh, my pleasure. I know Hank was one of the best playing on that organization, and he had my respect whenever he came to the plate.
And you were one of the best, too, and that says a whole lot. Cubs Hall of Famer Ferguson Jenkins sharing his thoughts on Hank Aaron here on The Score. I think what's just amazing to me in listening to Ferguson Jenkins talk about him is, and he's right about this, you know, in the 60s, this was an era of pitchers, Sandy Koufax, Don Drysdale, Bob Gibson, Denny McClain, the mound was raised, and it was a lot more difficult for hitters to do what Hank Aaron was able to do, just a sheer model of consistency throughout his career. And I wonder, you know, we all know he's great just because we look at the numbers, but we still look at Willie Mays because of the charisma and the fact that he played in two monster markets in New York and San Francisco, and Mickey Mantle played for the Yankees, that if it's possible for someone to be underrated as great as Hank Aaron was, I believe that's the case with Aaron. And to be able to overcome what he did, you know, there was a lot of adversity that Babe Ruth faced because Babe Ruth caused that adversity. The adversity that Hank Aaron had to overcome to reach his full greatness was because of what other people did to him. And that, to me, is the mark of what makes him amazing. It's the reason that Hall of Famers like Fergie Jenkins look at Hank Aaron in awe. It's the reason that even in a room full of Hall of Famers, and we'll have Ron Coomer coming up next, and he's a baseball player. People in baseball revere Hank Aaron, not just because of the great numbers that he put together with a bat in his hands, but because of the incredible man he was when he didn't have the bat in his hands. Let's take a break. When we come back, really excited about the 1 o'clock hour here on the show. We're going to have Ron Coomer, Tom Thayer, together, a free-for-all. We're going to talk about everything. Baseball, football, life, share some stories, laugh a little bit, and I hope you'll be entertained. Stick around. You can join us as well. 312-644-6767. Zach Zaidman in for Lawrence Holmes until 2 o'clock on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.